Imagine, for a moment, a chef working in a small restaurant kitchen on a busy evening. The restaurant has been open for a few hours, the dinner rush is just beginning, and the printer at the pass keeps spitting out new tickets. The chef glances at each one, then turns to her stove, and she is already moving by the time the ticket has finished printing. One ticket calls for the mushroom risotto, another for the seared scallops, another for the roast chicken with the brown butter sauce. Three completely different dishes, three different sets of finishing techniques, three different ways of plating. To an outside observer, it looks chaotic, but if you watch carefully, you start to notice something. The chef is not making each dish from scratch every time. She is reaching again and again into the same small set of prepared bases. There's a pot of stock simmering at the back of the stove, and she ladles from it into the risotto, and into the chicken sauce, and into the soup for the next table. There is a tray of pre-roasted garlic, and she uses cloves from it in three different dishes. There is a beurre blanc, a butter and wine reduction she made earlier in the afternoon, that becomes the sauce for the scallops, and the finishing glaze for the chicken, and a base for tomorrow's vinaigrette. What she is doing, what every working chef does, is what makes the kitchen possible. She is breaking her cooking down into small, named sub-recipes, and she is using each of those sub-recipes in many different dishes. She does not invent the stock every time she needs it. She does not start the beurre blanc from raw butter when an order arrives. She made these things once, gave them their names, and now she pulls from them, mixes them with the unique ingredients of each new dish, and produces the finished plate. This is one of the most important ideas in all of programming, and it is what we're going to talk about today. This is Rust, Gently, a patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 11, named Recipes. Today, we're going to look at what it means to give a piece of work in a program a name so that you can use it more than once. The way the chef gives names to her bases and uses each one across many dishes. We're going to meet the idea of a function properly this time. We have seen the word function before, briefly, in episode 7 when we read the line FN main in our first Hello World. Today we're going to understand what that FN really means and what it lets you build. Let me start with the question of why we would want to name a piece of work in the first place. Imagine you're writing a program that calculates the price of someone's grocery order. The program loops through a list of items, finds the price of each, and adds them all up. Along the way, it has to take a tax rate, say 6%, and apply it to the total. Applying a tax rate is a small calculation. It is essentially take the total, multiply it by the tax rate, and add the result of the total to get the final price. A few short lines. Now imagine that your program needs to do this calculation in several different places. Once at the end of the regular checkout. Once when the customer changes their mind and removes an item. Once when the receipt is printed. Once when the report runs at the end of the night. You could, in principle, write those same few short lines four times in four different places in the program. And the program would work. But you would have a problem the moment you needed to change anything about how tax is calculated. Maybe a new tax rule comes in that says items under $5 are exempt. Now you have to find every place in the program where you wrote the tax calculation, and you have to update every one of them. If you forget one, your program will have a bug. The receipt will be right, but the report will be wrong, or the other way around. The solution that every programming language gives you in some form, is to write the calculation exactly once, give it a name, and then refer to it by name everywhere it is needed. Write the recipe for the tax calculation once in a labeled jar on a shelf. Call it apply underscore tax. Then, anywhere in the program you need to apply tax to something, you just say apply underscore tax and pass it the value to apply the tax to, and back you get the answer. If the tax rules ever change, you change the recipe in the one jar, and every place in the program that uses it gets the new behavior automatically. This named reusable piece of work is what we call function. Every programming language has functions. They are in many ways the single most important building block of how real programs are organized. A large program might have thousands of functions, each one a small named recipe, with a larger program built out of them by calling them in different combinations. Let me show you what a function in Rust looks like. We have already seen one. The smallest possible Rust program, the Hello World we read in episode 7, was a function called main. Every Rust program has one, because main is the door the program walks through first. But you can write as many other functions as you want. Let me read one to you. The function might say, on its first line, the keyword fn, a space, the name apply tax, with an underscore between apply and tax, then an opening parenthesis, the name total, then a colon, then f64, then a closing parenthesis, then an arrow drawn with a minus sign followed by a greater than sign, then f64 again, then an opening curly brace. That whole long line is the function's signature. It's labeled the part that tells anyone reading the program what the function is called, what it takes in, and what it gives back. Inside the body of the function, on the next line, indented in, there's a single statement that computes the answer. The line says, the name total, then a star, then the decimal value 1.06, with no semicolon at the end. The absence of a semicolon is intentional, and we will come back to it in a moment. Finally, on the last line, all the way out at the left margin again, the closing curly brace. That is the whole function. Let me unpack it. The fn keyword tells Rust, I am about to define a new function. The name that follows it, apply underscore tax, is the function's name written in snake case, just like our variables from episode 8. The parentheses after the name list the function's inputs, sometimes called its parameters. In this case, there's one parameter called total of type F64, which is the decimal type. The arrow, written as a minus sign followed by greater than sign, tells Rust the type of value that the function will return. The closing curly brace, paired with the opening one, encloses the body of the function, the actual work it does. Inside, the function takes the value that was passed in, multiplies it by 1.06, the equivalent of adding 6% of itself to itself, and the result of that multiplication is what the function gives back to whoever called it. The reason there is no semicolon on that last line of the body is that in Rust, an expression without a semicolon at the end of a function body is the value the function returns. The whole language has this one quiet convention that the last thing you write with no semicolon is what comes back out of the function. To use this function elsewhere in the program, you call it. A call looks like the function's name, followed by an opening parenthesis, the value you want to pass in, and a closing parenthesis. So a line that says, the keyword let the name final price, an equal sign, the function name apply tax, opening parenthesis, the variable subtotal, closing parenthesis, semicolon, takes whatever is currently in the subtotal variable, hands it to the apply tax function, gets back the tax-adjusted result, and puts it in a new variable called final price. The function is the labeled jar on a shelf. The call is the act of reaching for the jar by name. Why this matters, especially for someone like you who is going to be reviewing what an artificial intelligence agent writes, is that functions are how programs stay readable. A large program is not a flat list of thousands of lines. It is a tree of functions calling other functions, each function doing one small thing, named clearly, with its inputs and outputs labeled. When the agent produces a piece of work for you, the function signatures are what you read first. You do not need to read every line of every function's body. You read the names, the types of the inputs, the type of the return value, and you already have a strong picture of what the program does. Reading code at the level of function signatures is one of the most valuable literacy skills you can develop, because it is what lets you keep up with the agent when it is producing far more code than you could ever write by hand. In real production code, functions are everywhere. Sail, the distributed query engine we have mentioned a few times, is made of tens of thousands of small functions across its dozens of crates, each one doing a single, named, reusable thing. The Cloudflare proxy called Pingora is the same. The Linux kernel itself is a vast tree of named functions, each one with a clear contract about what it expects and what it produces. The pattern is universal because it is the only way to keep complexity manageable as a program grows past a few hundred lines. Rust adds, on top of the basic function idea, a few of its own opinions. Functions in Rust have strict type signatures, so the compiler always knows what kinds of values flow in and out. Functions are also one of the places where Rust enforces the ownership rules we will meet in a future episode, the rules that prevent the memory bugs we keep coming back to. For now, just hold the basic picture. A function is a recipe within a recipe. You give it a name, you write it once, you call it everywhere you need it. The cook does not invent the stock every time. There's one more small habit that working Rust programmers develop around functions, and it is worth pointing out because it shapes how the whole language feels to read. Rust people tend to write small functions, not enormous ones. A typical Rust function is a few lines, maybe a dozen at most, doing one clearly named thing, returning one clearly typed result. If a function starts to grow past 20 or 30 lines, the convention is to break it apart into smaller functions, each named for what it does. This is a habit that comes partly from the language and partly from the community. Rust's strict type signatures make small functions easy to read because every input and every output is labeled. The compiler's careful checking makes small functions cheap because you can refactor without fear of breaking the rest of the program. The result, when you read a well-written Rust code base, is a kind of architecture made of small, calm, named building blocks layered carefully on top of each other. It is not the only way to write software, but it is one of the most pleasant ways to read it once you are used to it. When you find yourself reviewing what an agent has written, this small function habit becomes especially valuable. An agent that has been instructed to write small functions, each one named for what it does, produces output that is far easier to spot check than an agent that produces one large function with many things happening inside it. You can read the names. You can read the signatures. You can sample a few of the bodies. You do not have to trace every value through every line. That is the trade Rust is offering you again and again in every feature we have looked at. Pay a little extra care up front, and reading becomes the easier part of the work later. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that a function is a named, reusable piece of work, written once and called many times, the way a chef makes a base once and uses it in many dishes across an evening. The second is that in Rust, you write a function with the keyword fn, then the name in snakecase, then a parenthesized list of inputs with their types, then an arrow to the return type, then the body in curly braces, and the last expression, the body, with no semicolon, is what the function returns. The third is that real production programs are made of thousands of small named functions calling each other. And reading the function signatures, the labels on the jars, is the literacy skill that lets you understand a program without reading every single line of it. Next time on Rust, gently, we will look at how a program makes decisions. We will meet the simple shape of if and else, the way a recipe might say, if the dough has not risen enough yet, leave it for another 20 minutes, otherwise, shape it now and put it in the oven. The branching path, in plain words, with a small piece of Rust to make it concrete. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.